Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the 95th episode of Unfiltered. This is your co-host, Aaron Fitzpatrick, rolling without my Brian DeMarco sidekick here today, who is traveling in Austria. It is January 17th, and I have an return awesome guest in the studio today, Tom Gannon. Welcome back.
Thank you, Aaron.
Tommy was here over, I'd say, a year and a half ago as one of the first guests on my program. So it was awesome to have you back. And I guess we'll start with just a bit of news in the wine world that Giuseppe Cantarelli died this past week at the age of 84. So just a rest in peace to the man, the godfather of Amarone, I'd say.
Well, we're going to have to certainly raid DeMarco's cellars because I know he's got something down there.
He certainly does. Yep. Might be something in Mag, too, that we were just talking about.
I would imagine
about
it
Mag.
Would be, yeah.
Yeah. So he lived a long, I'd say, fruitful life. And I guess people sort of revere him as the...
Not just as Amarone's, but still, Cab Franc that he made, too, was certainly groundbreaking.
Sure. Yeah. Great, great wine. So, And when Tom was in the studio last, he was the man about 54th Street. Okay, 54th Street. I was about to say 45th Street, but 54th Street at Rothman Steakhouse, which is a nice steak den, I'd say.
Steak den, yeah. It's kind of urbane, though,
Yeah, definitely.
Sophisticated,
yeah. Plenty of cigars.
Out on the street,
yeah.
Bloomberg pushed it out, '03, I guess.
Yeah, so you're no longer there. So what's your new post?
No, you know what? I took a position with a company called the Spire Collection. It's kind of recruited by a couple of great guys, Brian Sweeney and John Blazon, who's a master sommelier in Florida. They're the top wines of the Jackson family. So I only work for two winemakers, and the wines that... I had always had on my list of Rothmans.
Oh, cool. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah. So it's Pierre Sayen, who makes Verite, and Chris Carpenter, who makes Coya and Cardinal. And they're both very, very different men, but in different styles of winemaking. Pierre is a Bordelais winemaker, although he's a rugby player from Gascony. And Chris, actually, oddly enough, is a football player. He's from Chicago. He had played tackle at Illinois.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and he looks like Magnum PI. He's got this big ass mustache, and he's like, but he makes all the different Mountain AVAs, which is really, really interesting to see. He gave a great interview on the Guild Somm site, the Guild of Sommeliers site, with Jeff Kruth, who's a master sommelier. I think it was back in August. About high elevation vineyards. And so the Coya, you have Mount Veeder, you have Diamond Mountain. He makes some Spring Mountain that he gets from the guys who own Spring Mountain Vineyards and Howe Mountain as well. And then Pierre makes Verite, which is three different expressions of Bordeaux blends, all from Sonoma, mostly from Knights Valley.
Cool. Is that how they sort of found you, was while you were working there?
I go back with these guys because they would come in and have dinner at Rothman's, going years back. So I knew Pierre and his wife, and Chris would come in, and Chris is a big music freak. So whenever there was, the Allman Brothers were playing at the Beacon or something, Chris would find some sort of excuse to have a wine event in New York and then show up.
Nice.
No.
And so what is your, what's your role with the Spire Group?
Well, I just, I sort of the manager, I guess. So, yeah, I sort of support for the people who, the sales force here, but also go out on my own and try to promote the wines and on a personal standpoint, drink them myself as much as possible.
Yeah. So, yeah. how was the transition from working on the sort of buying side to more of a sales representation side?
I think, you know, and you know, you could probably attest to this too. I mean, as long as it's something that you really believe in and the wines you like and the ones that that you're passionate about, then there is a transition, but it's not that difficult. I think when it's really difficult is when all of a sudden you're selling stuff that you wouldn't drink, you wouldn't cook with, and you feel like you're waking up every morning looking down the barrel of a loaded gun. And it's like, nah, it's, you know.
It must be nice, too, working for, you know, a smaller company where you guys have a lot more sort of, I don't know,
freedom to come out to Bushwick and just do a radio interview in the middle of the day. Yeah, that's okay. That's all right.
Excellent. Well, I'll definitely check those out. And you've since also dividing your time between Nashville, Tennessee and New York City, Harlem.
Yeah,
so,
it's good. It's, you know, city boy during the week and country gentleman on the weekends. It's interesting to see the differences in the wine cultures too. I mean, Nashville's a small but kind of emerging. There's a lot of great new restaurants opening.
It's like the new Atlanta in a way, a little
budding. You know, I mean,
restaurant scene.
Yeah, they've got there's a new restaurant called the Catbird Seat. That
good name.
When the guys, the Goldberg brothers, who were behind it, and when I talked with them about it, and then they said that they wanted to rival the French Laundry.
Wow.
So I mean, I don't know if they're going to get there yet, but they're, you know, they're certainly,
yeah, you got to have goals, you got to have some aspirations.
Reviews. Yeah.
The Catbird Seat. Okay, I remember that one. I've never been down to Tennessee, so or Nashville. So
we got a guest room.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. What would you say, just tapping on that a little bit further in terms of general consumers' knowledge, what people are sort of take, do they drink more white down there? Are they, you know, leaning more towards domestic consumption or looking
towards... Well, I mean, it really depends on the consumer, I guess, like anywhere.
Yeah.
You have a couple of notable collectors who live in Nashville and who, you know, some of whom, like Tom Black, lives in Nashville, but he was the main investor behind Alto. And in fact, you know, Alto's, their cellar was, in large part, was consigned wine from Tom's cellar.
Okay.
So, I mean, like in New York, where you're going to have the very, very savvy, you know, at the top collectors, and then the people who are going to, you know, buy the jug wine. I would imagine there's more of the jug wine people in Nashville, but... You know.
Yeah.
But no, it is, you know, the difficulty for me, just on a personal level, is not everything that we can get here is available there.
Right.
So that becomes frustrating on a Saturday when you want to drink something specific and you're like running
around.
Have
you gotten one of those suitcases yet where you can like pack like,
yes,
you know,
have.
You
indeed,
have?
Yeah.
Awesome.
And occasionally you have small bouts of heartbreak when you see a bloody, bleeding bag coming at you at the baggage claim.
Well, that's
and you just
already.
Hope. Oh, yeah. And you're just hoping, please don't let it be that bottle. Yeah.
But aren't those bags sort of like well protected? So like you could.
I would say they're pretty well protected, but you know, despite you know, fragile stickers that you might put on them when you check in, inevitably they
get tossed around a bit too hard.
We've
all seen that, And before the show started, you told me that you actually had started writing a column for one of the local papers in Nashville. Which
one
is that?
No, it's the Tennessean. So it's
the Tennessean.
Ooh,
the paper. Well done, Tommy G.
Man, no, a friend of mine is the food critic for them, for the Tennessean. So she kind of bugged her editor, I guess, and bugged me a little bit. And I wrote my first column in December on Madeira.
Oh.
On the historic series from the Rare Wine
it's a timely,
Company.
Timely subject for December as well.
Yeah, well, you know, but they also, like, I don't think they, and, you know, they're trying to figure out the parameters of what they want. So it's not as if I can just sit down and write about anything. You know, for example, the wines that I represent are going to be far too expensive for what they're looking for.
Yep.
So I have to kind of get creative and just, you know.
Yeah, you got to make it appealing to a larger
audience.
Yeah,
I got one due tomorrow. I have to figure out
really?
A subject. Yeah, you don't know. I'll put it together. Don't worry. I like deadlines. They clear the mind.
All right. You were one of those in college. Uh-huh. One extension, please. Mm. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
And is that a monthly or a weekly call?
Yeah, they have a rotating cast, I guess they're grabbing me, you know, I get an email and say, can you get one by next week, and like every month.
Well, it might be nice to be friends with the food critic, because then you might get dragged along to a few Tennessee hotspots. Yeah.
Such as they are, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So then does that also help you? I know you're also studying hard. You have a nice deck of flashcards with you today. Actually, imagine the amount of time that you spend on a plane is good, because you get time to study for the Master Sommelier exam.
Yeah. You know, I have to retake the advanced. I missed on one of the sections. There's three sections. And then I hope in 2 years after that to sit for the Master for the first time. And I have a lot of friends who are sitting for the first time this year. And a lot of friends who have passed two out of three.
Okay.
Just have one to go. And it's... It's stressful. It's certainly stressful. But you know, I my friend Christopher Bates. I don't know if you remember him.
Met
Chris.
Him. Yep.
He's
he was one of the finalists in the American.
In the American, in the best sommelier in America. Yes,
he's the
executive chef and general manager at a Relais and Chateau property in Milford, Pennsylvania, called Hotel Fauchère. And he has passed two out of three, and he just has tasting left.
Okay.
So, which is great, but, you know, you imagine, and I think, like, Ian Cobble also just has tasting. There's a few guys who just have tasting, and that's great, but when you think about it, it's like that the pressure to walk in, and the master rests on six wines, and how's your palate that day? Are the wines talking to you? Are they...
You got one shot.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you got one shot until next year, and then, you know, if you don't pass them all, I think it's in 3 years, if you don't pass all three components... In 3 years, then you reset. So I've had a couple friends that's happened to as well.
That's pretty brutal, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is. I mean, there's no way around it. It's pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like with as much as it is daunting, it's just still one of those life goals that people come back.
Yeah,
back
I mean,
for.
It's kind of because in the end, you know, Christopher said something to me that I thought was instructive and a really really positive way to look at things. He said, you know. When you, he had a setback where he just passed the service, but he didn't pass the theory. And he said after the next year he spent studying, he was glad because he knew so much more. And he felt like he really did have a sense of what he had missed and why he had. So I guess that's the perspective to have. Mm-hmm, that not mm-hmm. that, oh my God, I have to spend a whole other year and, you know, wreck myself for this.
Just making yourself even that... much more in tune with your, you know, your craft.
Indeed.
I just watched that trailer for the documentary that actually Ian Cobble is going to be in as well, called SOMM, S-O-M-M, which I think is coming out in the next couple of months, I imagine.
I think so. I remember Dylan talking about it, Dylan Proctor talking about it like a year ago when they were filming it.
It's a good trailer.
It was a great trailer.
It had that suspense that you're talking about of like, okay, I have this one last chance to do this particular part of the puzzle and, you know, the sort of obsession that you need to go through in order to pass.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had a conversation with Christopher one time and I was like, you're barely aware that sports, politics, that, I mean, and anything else exists. He's like, yeah, not my focus.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
all
food
in
and
nothing.
Wine, that's it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, cool. Well... We're going to change gears for the next half of the show, which we'll talk about your pretty recent trip to the West Coast, as well as upstate jaunt to the Finger Lakes.
Yeah, it was a good September. I'm very close friends with Oscar Binke, who is a partner in the Wiemer Winery, along with Fred Merwath, who's the winemaker. And so I helped them consult on their newsletters and website content and drink quite a bit of their wine because Oscar and his fiance stay with me in my apartment. And
when they come to the city.
Yeah.
From the
so they come,
okay.
when they come down, she works for the UN. So they have need to be here, but, I drink a lot of their Riesling, obviously. But I think that, you know, Fred is also an MW student, so he's studying for the Master of Wine. So he's a great resource to talk about the process, to taste wine with, just from a completely different perspective. You know, you go from being a sommelier in New York, where you might get to taste hundreds of wines a week because everyone's coming at you and they want your, their wines on your list, mm-hmm. and, or just they're your friends and they just want to come by and have a glass of wine with you. To where you go to taste with a winemaker who's looking for different things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, you're looking at things at from sometimes from a price point perspective or some, you know, is this applicable for my guests, for my cuisine, for this, for that? Where he's, and a lot of times, looking for faults and flaws. And so he sees it from a much different perspective. And he's a great winemaker, too, though. I really respect what they've done. I think that the Finger Lakes has come a long, long way in terms of quality. And undoubtedly, Weimer is at the front of that. And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a cause of conflict a little bit in the Finger Lakes, because Weimer does get a lot of the attention.
Okay.
But their commitment to quality has always
sure.
has been in the front. Yeah.
I should just say, well, I probably fall into that line as well, because I had two blind tastings that... I've been to one, which was hosted by Justin Christoph of AC Riesling. Weimer came out as my favorite. So
yeah.
You know, it's definitely the quality is definitely there, and it has a nice sort of mineral component, which really shines through in those wines.
Yeah, and they also do, you know, Fred has identified, they have three different sites, three different vineyards.
Uh-huh.
So they do some single vineyard bottlings. They do, you know, I mean, obviously they blend a lot of them depending on, because the original vineyard that's planted right behind the winery is the coolest site. And in fact, I had talked with Oscar, and I'm going to have to figure out how to do this. I want to write a letter to Nicholas Lidstrom of the Detroit Red Wings, because he's Swedish, Oscar's Swedish, and I wanted to have the Lidstrom Vineyard Riesling.
Uh-huh.
So I have to figure out how to do that. You know, sort of an homage, you know, to the Swedes, to Swedish hockey, and you know.
That sounds good.
And
like I told him,
I said, you know, don't even worry about New York City. We'll sell it all in Stockholm and Detroit.
All right.
Even,
or Nashville.
No. They hate the Wings down there.
Okay.
The Predators, the rivals. So gotcha. No, it wouldn't work.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not gonna put my sports down south for sure. So were you upstate after the storm or prior to the big storm up there?
It was prior to.
Okay. No. All right.
So. Yeah. I was there. I worked a little bit of the harvest with them, and we'd had some rain.
Oh, this past year?
Yeah, in September,
cool.
Yeah. Cool. And it was great because Fred and his wife, Marissa, were expecting. So we're at the sorting table. It was, you know, me and Fred and Marissa, and Marissa's, you know, 9.5 months pregnant.
Yeah, could go into contractions at any time.
They were literally, this was on Sunday, and they were inducing labor Tuesday.
Oof.
And you know, we're out there and Marissa's mother and Fred's mother, and we're all sorting, and then all of a sudden I didn't realize what was going on, because I'm just concentrating on the grapes coming in, and there's, you know, you're trying to pull out the rot, you know, the grapes that have any rot on them or anything like that, and all of a sudden everyone's flying around, and what had happened was they had been bringing down some Pinot Noir down Highway 14, and the straps from one of the bins got caught on the wheel of the trailer.
Mm.
And so it was just a massacre.
Yikes.
Of Pinot Noir on Highway 14. It was just all over the place,
yeah.
Just bleeding. It was just very sad, but
not what they needed.
No, not really. I mean,
no.
It was we got a lot in, but yes, some had to be sacrificed to the asphalt. So
Before we take a break, are there any other vineyards out there that you visited on that trip, or was that
I mean, you know, I had held the tasting at Rothman's Finger Lakes, so I mean, I think Ravines is making some great stuff.
Agreed.
Heart and Hands.
Yep.
You know, Anthony Road is making some great stuff. Lamoureux Landing, Standing Stone, I like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's the quality is certainly raising up. Fox Run, Red Tail Ridge.
Are you a big Riesling fan in general?
Huge, yeah.
Huge, yeah. Okay, cool.
Despite my steakhouse cred, yeah, huge.
Yeah, you couldn't play around with too many there, I assume. No?
Nah, not as much.
One other subject that I wanted to just tap in the second half is cigars. I had one on Saturday night, and I was like, Tuesday show? Maybe we'll just... I was sipping scotch with that cigar, but...
Okay.
I know you, every time I've seen you out and about on one given night, there seems to be a cigar in your vicinity. So I wanted to see what you enjoy drinking with it. And I know it's also part of the Master Sommelier exam and just sort of its context within the wine world. So take a thought on that and we'll be right back.
All right.
Soul, cause hip hop is old. She don't want no rock and roll. She want platinum or ice and gold. She want a whole lot of sun to fold. If you were obstacle, she just drive you cold. Cause one monkey don't stop the show. Little Mary's bad. In these streets she done ran ever since when the heat began. I told a girl, look here, calm down, I'ma hold your hand to enable you to peep the plan. Cause you was quick to learn and we can make money to burn. If you allow me to lay this game, I don't ask for much, but enough room to spread my way. And the world finna know my name.
I don't for much these days, and I don't bitch and whine if I don't get my way. I only wanna fertilize another behind my lover's back. I sit and watch it go.
You are listening to Unfiltered on the heritageradionetwork.com. Thanks, Carlos, for a little roots action. Always nice to hear a little throwback.
Thank
like
you,
that. Yeah. And we're broadcasting live today from Roberta's in Bushwick and with my guest today, Tom Gannon, who is wearing many hats. So I'm just going to have you all listen to the whole show to hear about what this man is up to. So we just ended the previous segment with a note on cigars, and I wanted to get Tom's two cents on how they play into classic service in this day and age when there's very little smoking allowed around town, and whether or not they're still relevant, and what pairings, if any, work.
Well, I mean, the relevance as far as the Master Sommelier exam goes, they cut out cigars a few years ago, mainly due to the fact that in many restaurants and across the country, smoking is illegal. So
right.
I think the relevance was sort of seen as waning. I'm not sure if the British chapter still continues that. And I know that American sommeliers were certainly at a disadvantage because there was an emphasis on Cuban cigars, which we are not supposed to be able to get here.
Right.
So they did cut it out, although in the ASA, the American Sommelier Associations, and the best sommelier in America, they still do have a cigar component, cigar service component, if you do make the finals.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly serves. And I like cigars myself quite a bit, so I mean, I think it serves anybody who works in this industry to at least have some sort of understanding about it.
Yeah.
We did used to do, along with Davidoff, when my friend Michael Herklotz, who's now at Nat Sherman, he's now running Nat Sherman.
Oh, okay.
We would do these. It was great because we couldn't smoke at Rothman's anymore, but we could smoke at Davidoff. So we would do these huge cigar wine dinners, and we had different themes. So we had an Oktoberfest, and we had there was an Italian G-Fest then in January that we did. And it would be like, four cigars and a few different wines. and a boatload of food. And typically I would find that...
Sounds divine. Yeah.
It was all right.
A hedonist delight.
Yeah, it was all right. And then usually gallons of limoncello after. And, certainly decadent. But, you know, with pairing with cigars, I think a lot of people have different minds on it. And I think it does depend on the cigar. I would always argue, though, it should never be like a wine that you really need to taste on its own.
Right.
I mean, nothing rare or, you know, older vintages, I think, would certainly suffer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But varietals like Zinfandel, Petite Syrah, I thought were always good to use to pair with cigars. Certainly some California Pinot Noir that might not be completely Pinot Noir, mm-hmm. you know, the darker, richer mm-hmm. style, higher alcohol style.
Some riper fruits.
Some riper fruits, yeah. too. I mean, you're talking about, you know, all that carbon, you know, all that smoke coming in is going to saturate your palate in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to change what your perception of the taste of the wine is, or whether that's good or bad. I think it's difficult. It's hard to find a specific match depending on the cigar because obviously cigars are as complex as wine.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, because of all the different tobaccos that go into a single cigar and the age of the cigar as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of that people don't consider that cigars do change as well. I mean, you are talking about fermented tobacco, so they will age as well.
Yep. Yep. Cool. Well, I feel like we could probably do an entire show on that and do a nice lineup of different stuff and see what would work.
If they let us smoke here, I mean, you know, what's all right, hey.
Carlos throws his hands up in the air. We'll say TBD. Yeah. So then you also were telling me before the show that you spent a couple days or maybe a week out in California in Napa and had the pleasure of...
Yeah, but I was out there for a couple of weeks in October, and I was there beginning with a scholarship, basically, from the Napa Valley Vintners that I got through the Guild of Sommeliers site, and it was about 20 of us who are in the MS program.
Okay.
And
so you had to be in the MS program to even...
Well, no, not necessarily.
Not really,
I mean, but
it certainly helped your scholarship.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on the Guild Somm site, chances are mm-hmm. you're probably using that as a study guide, and it is really the best wine resource out there. I mean, it's like everything is up to date, and you have chat boards, and everybody can just throw questions out.
Okay,
and everyone's really supportive. I mean, I'm consulting on a place on the Upper West Side. It's supposed to open in September, called Cafe Tallulah. My friend Greg Hunt is the owner. And we're looking at enomatic systems.
Yep.
And so I put up a question on enomatic systems, and I had all these people answering me right away, and phone calls. And
who've had experiences.
Who've had experience with them, yeah. This woman, Kim Oshiro, called me from Portland, and we had, like, a, you know, for half an hour, she just broke it down for me. And
wow.
Just people are really generous.
Curious to know
yeah.
what the outcome of that was, or are you still undecided?
We're still looking at the you know cost to benefit ratio
okay.
about it, but
okay.
I mean
so
it's
a tough one. Then
they look cool.
Yeah.
I mean they look very good, but we actually went to go check it out at Four Seasons restaurant and
here like, in
wow.
New York.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's like, oh, it looks great. And then we asked the servers, they're like, it's broken. And then so it's like, well, are the servers just telling you that because it's too much trouble to operate, or is it actually not operational? So
mm-hmm. Well, just one of those things, like any other machine will have the tendency to break. Mm-hmm. So what's your backup plan?
That is exactly. Your backup plan is just open the bottles and leave them on the bar, I guess.
Yeah.
So I was in California on this scholarship trip to the NVV, and it was great because everything was really, really regimented, and they would just pair people with different winemakers or vineyard managers throughout the day, and then they would give you bottles too. So I spent some time up on Spring Mountain Vineyards with their vineyard manager, and it was really cool because it's an old property, dates back to the 1880s, and they still have the original barn that actually was built in 1870, and they still have the tack and all of the, you know, showing you where. I mean, it's just used for storage now, but when you consider the winemaking that went on in Napa on Spring Mountain, some really, really rugged terrain, and trying to get horse and buggy
mm-hmm.
to pick these grapes, and then to get these grapes into a winery, which, you know, is a barn, and then you have to bring the grapes up, and you know, and they used, Gravity because they had nothing else as well, mm-hmm, which you know, everybody's mm-hmm. going back to now.
It's feet.
It's pretty interesting stuff. And it's owned by, in the modern times now, it's owned by a member of the Safra banking family. So it's being obviously brought up to modern standards. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Apparently he's like the third or whatever, you know, statistically. He's very high up there in terms of wine collectors, and his wine is all over the world, and some of it is actually there. But none of the vineyard managers nor the winemaker apparently has been in there. Nobody's seen it.
Okay.
So, you know, so just an air of mystery. Uh-huh. No.
Didn't even get to see that door.
It, no.
Okay.
No, but it was cool because I actually also got to see with Chris Carpenter, who now I work with. I just, luck of the draw, was with him and MW student, another guy in the MS program. And he took us through with, he had five different wines that had all been in five different types of oak, all medium plus toast. And they were all the 09 Lacoya Mount Viter Cabernet. And so we all tasted them. We all rated our favorites and talked about why. And what the exercise was, we also did it with his assistant winemaker, Laura. The exercise was basically him trying to present to us how a winemaker makes an educated guess about purchasing oak and types of oak for the following vintages based mm-hmm. on how that oak interacted with their wine in the previous vintages.
Right.
And it was pretty interesting because you see just how much it changes, and you're still making a very educated guess because you're talking about a very young wine, so mm-hmm. the oak isn't fully integrated yet.
But all from the same cooperage and
different cooperages. That's okay. the thing. It's okay. all the same wine and all the same toast level, all medium plus toast, but all different cooperages.
Okay, I thought it was varying degrees of toast, but it's all so the same.
They want to leave that same level. Yeah,
interesting. And then you all sort of took a little notes on it. And they're gonna consideration.
Consideration. It went into the circular file as soon mm-hmm. as we left. Yeah, but. No, I mean,
sounds like a good exercise.
It was very, very cool to see that how they build those wines.
Cool. And then you were telling me about another highlight with the Grace family.
Yeah, and then I stayed with Dick and Ann Grace for the weekend, and I had met Dick a couple of years ago because a friend of mine, Mark Snyder, actually sells his wine in New York to a few restaurants. And
yeah, a little shout out to Angel Share and Mark.
Angel Share,
yep.
Yeah.
Great,
does some
great
good
wines.
Stuff, does some good stuff. And so Dick and I wound up talking for about 2 hours. He's a fascinating man. And they do a lot of charity work. So he was showing me a picture book of a school they had built in Tibet. And we were talking about that. And then I told him about my best friend Pat, who had built some schools in the Thai-Burma border. And, you know, to make a very long story short, Dick wanted some more information about that, which I got to him. And now, a few years later, he and Pat are very good friends, and Dick and Ann Grace have been to Thailand about four times now to support their projects and get involved in what they're doing. And Pat's doing this great thing called Youth Connect, which is like an intern program for the children of Burmese migrants. And Dick has thrown his weight behind that, which is
awesome.
Pretty substantial.
Yeah.
So, but in addition to that, too, it was great to actually go and spend some time with them at what is really one of the wineries that kind of made modern California wine. It was the first cult winery, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Certainly one of the first to have a family vineyard designate, because what happened was Dick and Ann had been living in San Francisco and were just up on a trip, just wine tasting, just seeing Napa Valley, just, you know, touring around. And by chance, they were having breakfast, and a real estate agent they'd gotten to know mentioned that he was going to show this house, this sort of abandoned house. And then as he was walking out, said, "Do you want to come see it?" So they did, and they decided to buy it. I think this was 75, and moved their family, their three young children up from San Francisco with them, and sort of decided just to plant grapes because somebody said you should plant grapes here.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, and then we're in 78, we're harvesting it all with family, and which is something they continue to do today. Like, if you're friends of the Graces, you can take part in the harvest, and everybody,
That's
it's
awesome.
Just, you know, it's not, you know,
yeah.
They come up and harvest the grapes around the house. And So he was selling the flute to Charlie Wagner from Camus, and Charlie said that this is really beautiful fruit. It's really, really clean, and we can make something special with this. So I think it was about 2 barrels they made, and that was the first Grace Family Vineyard designate. So from 78 until 82, Grace Family is actually Camus label.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then 83 was the first vintage was.
So you went down to the cellar and you saw these bottles all in pristine condition, I imagine.
It was pretty cool. But I mean, they're very unassuming people and they're very like just
welcoming and
and incredible. Cool. Incredible. I mean, 73 years old, they took me mountain biking at Angwin up on Howe Mountain, and they'd just gotten back from Rwanda. And Dick had a spider bite, and you know they'd flown back from Africa the day before, and you know I think I'm 34, and I was like coughing up, hacking out cigarettes I'd smoked 10 years before or whatever, and meanwhile they're just steady pace, you know, very humbling,
Inspiring, I'd say as well, yeah. Well, we are about up for time this afternoon, so thanks for sharing a wealth of good experiences that you've had in this past year. Yeah.
It was my
pleasure.
Sounds
like there's more to come.
Well, it remains to be seen. I don't know if Carlos is going to let us smoke. We'll see.
Well, aside from that, it sounds like you're on your way towards big things with the Master Sommelier exam and another trip out west next September for some time too. So
yeah, certainly.
Yeah, wish you all the best in that and your new venture. And I look forward to having you back on the show again.
All right, well, thanks, Aaron. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Carlos. And look forward to having you join next week every Tuesday at 4 p.m. and listening to our archives, www.heritageradionetwork.com, and look for Unfiltered. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.